What's up?
Want to talk about ADS CFT?
But what?
SCFU, SVU, that Paul Scheer show? Is that what you're talking about?
So, string theory.
Oh, okay.
There's been a lot of roads as to, you know, does string theory relate to, in any way, stuff that's real? And the closest people have come to is something called ADS-CFT. It's anti-de Sitter space / conformal field theory. There's a course...
Anti-what?
Anti-de Sitter space.
De Sitter?
Yeah.
Is that a word I should know?
It's a Dutch guy named de Sitter. Oh, okay. And he came up with... de Sitter space is a Minkowski space with a positive cosmological constant. Anti-de Sitter space is a Minkowski space with a negative cosmological constant.
I thought it was going to be, we don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's not de Sitter space. It's not what this guy thought of. It's anything but that.
As far as we know, we live in a de Sitter space, or it can be best approximated as a de Sitter space because it has a positive cosmological constant because the universe is expanding. That's the lambda factor in LCDM. But there's a correspondence between, a mathematical correspondence between conformal field theory, which is quantum mechanics and set theory, and ADS, anti-de Sitter space. So you have an actual mathematical correspondence you can draw between a geometric theory and a gauge theory. So this became a very interesting way for people to look at things, and actually it's the basis for things that we think we understand, like Hawking radiation.
Okay.
However, this whole, and I talked about the black hole firewall problem, the black hole firewall problem a couple weeks ago, but it's really starting to make people question ADS-CFT completely, whether it means anything. Because there's a correspondence between ADS-CFT doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything you can make of that. People were trying to apply it, but we know we live in a de Sitter space, not an anti-de Sitter space, as far as we can tell. So what does it matter if there's a correspondence between an anti-de Sitter space? Not to mention that what we're finding is that this firewall problem with black holes is presenting a pretty large problem to both relativity and, you know, some pretty well thought of theories in quantum field theory. So the question is, and let me reiterate the question again.
I am wishing for the days where we talked about stuff that I could actually get my head around a little bit.
Well, so the idea is from the Einsteinian idea of relativity, no one ever thinks that they're in a special space. You know, if you're traveling, if you're moving along at a certain speed, or if you're not moving, you shouldn't be able to really tell the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of goes around to saying that, you know, the space should essentially be, there shouldn't be things where, to put it in a way that sort of makes sense, where weird stuff just suddenly happens. It should be much more fluid than that. But so the idea is that if you're crossing into a black hole, you're going through the event horizon, in Einsteinian relativity, you should, I mean, other than the fact that you're crossing the point of no return of a black hole, as far as you're concerned, traveling through that, it should be no different than you're just traveling through empty space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if it's a large black hole and you're not being spaghettified right away. But the firewall theory says that there's so much stuff going on at the black hole event horizon that essentially, as soon as you hit the event horizon, it's like hitting a wall. It's like you're traveling through space and all of a sudden you smash into this thing. You basically get instantly destroyed by smashing into something that's hotter than the sun. It's as if a wall materialized in front of space out of nowhere. It really sort of breaks down some very well held ideas of relativity. And so if firewall is true, then this sort of principle, that this Copernican principle, that, you know, it doesn't matter where you are.
So what you're saying, your material gets destroyed when it hits the event horizon?
Yeah.
Instead of falling past it and then all that stuff deeper.
Yeah.
So where's this originate from? Where's this?
This originates from...
And Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about firewalls instead
this
of space.
This is really new. This is within the last couple of months that this really became a serious issue. And now they're having conferences on it because, you know, so a paper came out and it was pretty much like, wow, people started to gloss onto this and started to say, this really throws a whole new loop that we hadn't thought of before.
Okay, so what's the physics here, or what's the theory, or why do you get destroyed at the event horizon when previously you thought it was not then?
Well, so the idea behind it was that there's, it's really complicated.
Okay.
There are two things to understand. The first is that there is an implication that there can be a type of communication through the black hole event horizon that has to do with entangled particles, that you can have a one entangled particle that is entangled to another particle near the event horizon, and you can have that particle also entangled to a particle in the event horizon, which means that there's an information paradox. I don't totally understand that. I've been trying to. It's really pretty complicated. But the other problem is that, okay, so Hawking radiation implies that there's, you know, particle pairs sort of being created. One falls in, one falls into the black hole, one gets thrown out, and that eventually black holes will radiate away. So, but
I thought that had to do with the uncertainty, and like you could be a particle inside the black hole, but then poof, you've been teleported outside the black hole because of the uncertainty principle, and now you get to go away, and then a black hole could evaporate.
No, what it has to do with is it has to do with sort of negative energy boundary at the black hole event horizon, where there's enough energy that you can actually, that virtual particles become less of a mathematical statistic and become mm-hmm. it can become actually real because the energy of the event horizon is so great that it can put enough energy to cause these particles to actually substantiate. One falls in, the other one falls out, and through a weird process, what it actually does is it radiates energy away extremely slowly.
But if one's still falling in, how's the black hole eventually evaporate?
It's
complicated.
Yeah.
I get it. But if I can't ask questions that you can answer, then there's no point in talking.
I don't understand it well enough to give you an answer to that. That wouldn't make much sense. But the idea here is that at a certain point, after a while, if this process is true, then the black hole event horizon should not be just black and nothing happening, but it should be roiling. It should be constantly throwing out particles mm-hmm. at extremely high speeds and extremely high energies, essentially saying that there is a point in space that is basically a firewall.
So when these particles happen, they're one's never crossing, one's going in, right? So, I mean, and the energies there are so crazy. That's why there's jets on the poles of the black hole, right? Because stuff gets accreted around and shot out.
Well, that's because stuff is falling in. But in this case, you have essentially a sort of correspondence with space-time itself that's causing enough energy to throw out, to make a particle exist and then throw that particle out because the other one goes in. Mm-hmm. So because you're creating particles at this boundary, that's why you're eventually throwing out all the other stuff.
Okay. What kind of particles are we talking about here? Anything I recognize?
Yeah, sure. It could be any type of particle. I mean, it could be photon. Probably photons would be the most likely, but I mean, you know, depending.
But you're saying they're virtual particles that get created.
Yeah, virtual particles are a weird thing because people sort of assume that they actually exist when they don't. But they can under the right circumstance, like a black hole.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it has to do with...
Okay.
It has to do with the Dirac equation.
So let's save our listeners, if there's any left, and drop the black hole shit.
Okay.
What else is on your list?
All right. Tim Tebow.
I have heard nothing about him. What'd he do now?
He got cut.
Oh, no.
Shitty quarterbacks get cut. It happens.
Cordell Stewart. Remember Cordell Stewart from the Pittsburgh Steelers? Uh-huh. All right.
More particle physics.
Miley Cyrus, you got her on the list?
No, that's a good question. I don't get it. Why is it a bad thing that she... I mean, what is she? How old is she?
I don't know who she is. I know nothing about her other than I watched the video after like Twitter exploded.
She's in her late teens and she did some sort of vaguely sexual moves. Okay.
Well, she did a really bad act, which included vaguely sexual moves. If it was a good act, then it probably wouldn't have been as bad because it seemed like she was stoned when she did it. That's probably part of the reason that it was... I mean, it was a horrendous act.
Okay, so I didn't watch
sexual
the
moves
thing.
Or not.
All I saw was the Breaking Bad version of it.
Didn't see that.
We should talk about Breaking Bad because it was a great episode. But you know, the point where Walt makes his confession, mm-hmm. quote unquote, and Hank and Marie are watching it on the TV. And they're just stunned, you know, in stunned silence looking at it.
Oh.
And the people took that and took the Miley Cyrus video and then just stunned up.
Did you see the screen cap of Will Smith and his two kids actually watching the Miley Cyrus? Yeah. And you're just like,
well, that
what?
Was, but unfortunately, that was mislabeled. That was them watching the Lady Gaga.
Oh, really?
In the beginning. Uh-huh. So, okay. Yeah, too bad. But let me see if I can show you, because I think it was GIF'd. So I can just show you the GIF.
That's funny because, yeah, they had the stunned silence as they're watching Walt pin everything on Hank and cut to Miley Cyrus touching herself with a foam finger. She had a, you know, foam war number one finger and she's rubbing herself with it. But that's not the... I mean, that's what most people were being shocked about. It was just her dancing was erratic and horrible, and yeah, the Breaking Bad one's pretty funny.
I mean, it was such a great scene in Breaking Bad that it it's going to be used for things. It's like that Hitler movie, you know, that keeps getting used for things. This is going to be used for any shocking thing on TV forever.
Yeah, but the person who first thought it up is a genius. This is great. They're watching the VMAs, and Hank's like, what the... I am so out of touch about pop music. I barely know who Miley Cyrus is, and I have no idea who the asshole with the golden microphone is. And
you're going to love this. The asshole with the golden microphone is Robin Thicke. He has a song called Blurred Lines, which a lot of people think is kind of rapey.
Okay.
Because, I know you
Blurred Lines.
Oh. I know you need it. I know you're not. You saying no, but you want it, or something like that. I don't know what the whole song is, but Robin Thicke is
Alan Thicke.
Alan Thicke's son.
No. Oh, I just saw this asshole with a golden microphone, and okay,
yeah.
Yes, Breaking Bad. Good. Oh, that the false confession that Walt filmed was so well done.
Not quite airtight if you really start to think about it, but that's okay.
It'll keep...
Good enough.
It'll keep Hank quiet. Yeah. I mean, until Hank... I mean, Hank's going to have to really figure something out to not have to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell... I was surprised to see Jesse gassing...
I mean, like, for example... Well, it is an example of one of the reasons why I don't think that the thing is airtight is because... if Hank was behind a meth empire, why would he need to have Walter White pay for his physical therapy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things don't add up if you really think about it.
But you know, that was the reveal. He never knew that the drug money was paying for his rehab. So now he's implicated, even if Walt's the mastermind. Right? I mean, so...
Yeah.
That sucks for Hank. So Jesse's pouring gasoline all over Walter's house.
Well, we've seen the house in the future and it wasn't burned down.
Was it burned out a little bit, though?
Well, the furniture wasn't there. And there was graffiti. But... It wasn't burned down or...
Maybe they just couldn't live there anymore. It turned into an abandoned house because of all the gasoline that was in all the carpeting and everything.
So that means he never gets to the point of actually lighting it on fire. He just throws gasoline on everything. Maybe he's stopped by Junior Flynn.
Yeah, I was waiting for Flynn to. Like, become a meth head or something like that. Like, last season, it certainly... Or was either 3 or 4. It definitely seemed like, you know, Walt was going to be conflicted with, you know, his son's life was ruined by the thing he was doing.
I kind of like that it didn't go that route because, it ties everything in too neat a bow.
But also, we forget how compressed the timeline is. And it was almost too short of a time for that kind of thing to happen.
Yeah, this has all happened in basically a year.
Mm-hmm.
So.
They had to really make that clear a couple times, right? Just to get people's expectations realigned. Flynn looks so much older.
Yeah. Well, that's like Lost. I mean, the whole show Lost only took place about 80 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, you think of it, it was on for, 6 years and.
Yeah, but like this season, Flynn looks like he's like 25. You know? He can't look like a high school kid anymore, no matter how hard he tries. Walter Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. Every week, it's the only show I've watched live in like 5 years.
It's been great. There hasn't been an episode yet that's been like disappointing. They've all had really great moments and kept you wanting more. So,
right,
it leaves you thinking, man, they're on track. They know what they're doing.
It's gonna be over all too soon. I'm not wishing every episode too fast. But
there's a certain. There's a certain sort of, I'm sad it's over. But there's also a certain goodness in the idea that,
they got to finish their story.
They got to finish their story, and not only that, but we got this nice present of a piece of entertainment.
And they're going to finish it better than Lost did.
Maybe. Well, hopefully. But we got... Look, Lost was great, too. It didn't end as well as it could have, but it was a damn entertaining show for when it was on.
Yeah,
and this show was just a wonderful morsel of entertainment that we have, and that will influence other entertainment down the road. And it's great that we have it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to end at some point. All good things, as they say. So if you're gonna end. If you're going to end a great show, the 6 seasons, or was it 5 seasons? 5 seasons is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what they do in England when they have, shows that last 12 episodes and that's it.
Yeah. No, I'm not complaining. I'm not wishing the episodes too fast. And, as long as I hear things are wrapped up, the writers aren't, spoiling too much, but they're like, things are good. And they've done nothing to make us doubt that. So far, I watched Through Orphan Black, the whole first season there. It's good. It's just like, if anything, I feel they're taking a little too much leeway with, oh, let's just turn this into a twist. You know, like, oh, this person, oh, is not who you think, you know, at the at the very end, right when she dies, you know, like that kind of thing. It's like...
Well, like, you know, you didn't see what was... You didn't... I mean, like, certain characters don't turn out the way you expect them, but yet it makes sense that they went that way. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. the suburban mom character. Mm-hmm. What happened makes sense, but you mm-hmm. didn't expect that sort of thing to happen.
Right.
And again, I think Tatiana Masala, the girl, I can't pronounce her name because I don't know it as well as I should, but she is excellent in that show. I mean, all those different...
I love when she plays... one character pretending to be the other character and not doing it as good, you know, it's hilarious.
Yeah. All those different, you know, characters are extremely different. And yeah, I mean, she can play somebody imitating somebody else and not being as good at it.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
You forget, you always forget that, you know, she's playing multiple roles.
You do easily and early because, you know, with CG, they're mm-hmm. so easily able to put her touching. Yeah. I mean, she can touch herself as a different character, you know, and make it look realistic. You know, it's not the old school where they're never in the same scene. Or
slightly obscure screen. Yeah. The Patty Duke show is not that. But they're cousins.
Yeah, so Orphan Black's pretty good. Told a couple people at work they need to... It's hard to sell, right? Because, I mean, I only watch it because I trust your judgment. Mm-hmm. You need to watch Orphan Black, but don't look it up online.
Right.
You don't want to be spoiled by anything. So just go watch it. And it's hard to convince someone to do that, especially since they just can't TiVo it. You know, they have to go get it via other means, so...
Well,
and for everyone listening, sorry it's spoiled.
No, I think you can tell the basis of the show, which is clones, but not, you know, but not sell short the show itself.
Yeah. I mean, the clones is a nice reveal, though. It'd be nice if you, like, I didn't know it, right?
Yeah.
So it was a nice reveal, but yeah, it wouldn't ruin everything. There's lots of other, like, all these twists, even though, like I said, I think they're getting a little heavy on the it's not what it seems. I mean, that's a big part of the show, but it's like every episode, oh, it's not what it seems. It's not what it seems. It's not what it seems. Like, enough of the it's not what it seems. Let's progress down one of these things.
I think
develop one of these plot lines deeply. You know?
Maybe not. I mean, maybe the show is better as a show that, you know, that keeps heaping surprise. And maybe,
but it feels like you're going around in circles at that point.
As long as it works for the show, that's fine. As long as it continues to work. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You know, if it gets tired, then that's a problem. But it hasn't gotten tired yet.
No, it hasn't gotten tired. It's just, like, when Mrs. S, you know, is not what she seems, and then is dead, or mm-hmm. whatever. It's like, well, it's like, just develop one of these things a little bit deeper, instead of a twist after twist after twist. You know, I mean, it's just constructive feedback. The show's good, I'll watch next season. Not complaining. Hopefully there's less it's not what it seems as next season.
The next thing I gotta get you to watch is Elementary, which is the CBS Sherlock procedural. And
I watched a little bit of that. I just didn't get into it.
I think it's really good. I think that Johnny Lee Miller and Lucy Liu do fantastic performances. I've never been really a fan of Lucy Liu before, but I think she does a good job here. Johnny Lee Miller is fantastic as Sherlock. But really, the interesting thing about... And I said this before, but I'm not sure, so I'll repeat it. Whereas the UK Sherlock is very much about Sherlock Holmes, the CBS Elementary is more about Watson. Sherlock's going to be a major character, and it's in there, mm-hmm. but it's sort of about the evolution of Watson. So it's interesting. It's a different perspective on the mythos, which is cool. And I think they do a really great job with it. Now, I don't think it's the greatest show ever. I think
you also like The Mentalist, and I just couldn't get that.
I didn't.
Either.
I liked The Mentalist briefly, but I got really sick of it pretty quickly too. This is a much better show. That okay. I like The Mentalist as sort of a fun escapist, you know, sort of drivel. And it was more in line of guilty pleasure. Sherlock is not, or Elementary is not a guilty pleasure. Elementary is a genuinely good show.
Hmm. Okay. Have you spent any time with Hell on Wheels?
No.
You know, they're a third season now is airing, and I'm still into it. I mean, I think it's well done. I could put it up on the BT Sync if you're interested in checking it out, the first season.
I can get it.
You can get it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Maybe I'll check it out. I don't know. I sometimes I feel like, you know, I hear Homeland's really great, but I'm just like, I don't know if I want to get into that.
I'm looking forward to Homeland starting up too. If I was picking the two, see, Hell on Wheels is a really good story. Homeland. If you don't like the escalating cliffhanger every episode, I could see how Homeland might turn you off a little bit. And Claire Danes' character is kind of annoying. It's good to watch. I would say Hell on Wheels is a better show if you have a little patience for the Claire Danes character. Because Claire Danes' character can be a little like, oh, I mean, I know she's supposed to be, you know, beer's taking away my memory.
She has a disorder, right? She's bipolar, right?
Yeah, bipolar, right? And she's probably playing bipolar really well or whatnot, but it's like, again, it feels like enough of that, you know. Let's get back to the others. Like, oh, and it's just like chronically bad decisions she makes, right? It's like, come on, you can't make that many bad decisions, you know. So you get a little bit of that. Where Hell on Wheels is just a good story, you know. It's a pretty deep plot, lots of moving parts. You know, the building the railroad, and you know, there's a bunch of characters. It's pretty good.
So, give me the general scope of Hell on Wheels again. I mean, just the big overview. I don't need to
the building. The working on building the Transcontinental Railroad. The town that's at the end of the rail line is called Hell on Wheels. It moves as the rail line progresses. The main character on the show is what is his name? Colin Buchanan or. It's right after the Civil War. He fought for the South. They lost. He owned slaves. They lost, yeah. So, you know, so there's a lot of animosity between most of the people there that are, you know, Yankees and mm-hmm. then in him, Colin Bohannon, that's his name. And, I'm trying to figure out how much would be a spoiler for the first season or not, but he lost his wife and kids in the war, so he's kind of. One of the subplots is he's hunting down the regiment, the platoon that, you know, was, in, you know, that caused that he killed his kids. But then he's also working on the rail line. And then the guy that played Star Trek, The Next Generation, the engineer guy, the new Scotty, you know, and Next Generation.
Colm Meaney.
Yeah, he's a big character. He's a debaucherous, you know, asshole of a character. He's running the line in the beginning of the first season and whatnot. And so there's a lot of interaction there. I'm trying to think what else is going on. There's a couple of the characters. From there, it's more minor characters. There's a female main character. Her husband's a surveyor, and he gets killed, so I'm kind of spoiling a little bit here and there, I guess. But, you know, she comes into a main role in the first season. And a couple Irish guys that are just trying to make a living doing a lantern show, they fall into some good fortune and become some, you know, and get into there. I've already spoiled it a little bit, but I think you'll still enjoy. It's good. It's period dialogue. It's...
Sounds like, I mean, I haven't watched Deadwood yet, and I think I would want to watch that before I watch Hell on Wheels.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, Deadwood's, I think I have DVDs of Deadwood. I'll have to check over there. Well, you probably download Blu-rays, so you probably don't want the DVDs.
Yeah. 5.1 surround sound.
Probably part of the reason I like Hell on Wheels is it's a little bit of Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so probably watch Deadwood first. Problem with Deadwood is it's going to leave you hanging.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know. As long as I go into it knowing that, then it's not as much of a problem.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get to see Timothy Oliphant do, you know, as good a role as he does in Justified. So he plays a hell of a role in Deadwood.
Let's see. Oh, we need to do Amazon Anonymous.
Woohoo! I'm going to pause because I got to pee. All right, we're back. We're done peeing and reviewing the Amazon Anonymous. I'm going to go with the commercial chalkboard contact paper, 18 inches by 6 feet. So it's
that's a lot of contact paper, 6 feet.
But it's chalkboard, right? You stick, instead of getting the chalkboard paint or whatnot, you kind of just stick it on there. That'll give you a 3 foot by 3 foot square of writing deliciousness.
Well, see, here's an interesting question. So it's chalkboard, but from what I've seen, most places, you know, have switched to dry erase.
This is for like a toddler's bedroom.
This would be used for.
So you would put this on the wall in your toddler's bedroom and let them draw on the wall. And they do sell whiteboard paint as well. Like, you can get, like, chalkboard paint, whiteboard paint. It's even magnetic. You could put magnets on it.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty neat paint. But this contact paper would be a lot cleaner and
easier.
I think
they're also making stuff that has lights in it, too. That sort of, like, wallpaper that has integrated lights on it.
Okay.
That's a cool idea. But, okay.
This is only $7.59 with free shipping on Amazon Prime. Oh, no, free shipping on orders over $25.
I think that's interesting. Yeah, like I said, I mean, I find the demise of the chalkboard to be really interesting.
I'm curious if, like, my elementary school still has chalkboards or whether they've, like, ripped them out and put in whiteboards.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta think whiteboards are cheaper.
But an old elementary school that already has them, did they rip them out or not? That's the question. I have to go to my elementary school sometime and figure out if they're still there or not.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, remember those old overhead projectors
so
they used to have?
Allison started kindergarten this week, right?
Wait, I didn't get into my pick.
Okay, we're talking about chalkboards, right. Let me go real quick. Not only do they not have chalkboards, they have smart boards with the projector and the, you know, the mark. Like, we had an Nauticom, right?
Yeah.
But slightly better, slightly more well done. But yeah, every classroom, even in kindergarten, have smart boards.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way things are going. I mean, I was saying, remember those overhead projectors that we used to have and they put transparencies on it? You know, that's the thing in the past. Now you just run a PowerPoint presentation on a digital projector. So, yeah, I mean, technology marches on relentlessly. And
there's something about overheads, though, right? Because, like, I remember my physics class, the teacher would use a Sharpie right on clear, you know, he would do the work on the overhead projector instead of the chalkboard, maybe. Mm-hmm. So he was taking advantage of the technology at the time. You really can't do that live calculation with PowerPoint, you know, not on the fly, not just...
Well, you can't write it, but you can add in the pieces and make it, you know,
stay. It would take a lot more planning, orchestration, production.
Yeah.
With a smart board, you could get that back, right? You could do the writing on the board. So there's an advantage to an overhead, a chalkboard, a smart board type thing. Okay, go to yours.
So one thing that hasn't changed in this time period is the need for certain equipment. And what do I mean by certain equipment?
Well, Legos?
No. we have an instrument player in our audience who plays the baritone saxophone and needs reeds. So, Van Deren baritone saxophone reed is number 3, box of 5. Reeds are basically, you know, I used to play clarinet, so I know reeds. They're pieces of wood that vibrate and help, you know, give the sound to your instrument. They are they're kind of like a baseball glove. You have to wear them in to get them really good. I think it's you know great that people play instruments because instruments are cool sort of outlets. And
those are expensive reeds.
Well, yeah.
$34 for 5 reeds?
Yeah.
I've played the saxophone. I played the baritone saxophone in school. And I was not buying...
Well, no, you were a student. You weren't going for the, you know, the best of the best. You were going for the cheapest. This guy's whoever...
Yeah, this guy's not buying him for his 6th grade saxophone playing kid, that's for sure.
This is someone who's buying, you know, a nice group of reeds.
They list for $70 for the 5-pack.
Yeah.
And Amazon has them for $34.90.
That's a pretty good deal. But I just saw that and I was like, that's pretty cool. Reeds. It's the kind of thing that, like, yeah, you know, you don't think about, but, you know, you need these things occasionally.
Frequently brought with the alto sax and the tenor sax reeds. Yeah, I had an alto sax, and because I had a large frame, they're like, hey, you should play the baritone because you can carry the heavy piece of brass. And then, like, hey, you should join jazz band. And I never practiced. It was funny. In band class, the teacher would yell at me for not practicing.
Yeah,
in jazz band, she'd never yell at me for not practicing. Because I could quit jazz band, I guess. I don't know. But, like, it was weird.
Well, jazz is it's more about...
Maybe my lack of goodness was not as apparent in jazz because...
Well, yeah, jazz is more about spontaneity and sort of just going with the flow, whereas...
Maybe I should have specialized in jazz.
Yeah, whereas, you know, big band is about being precise and on the moment and getting those things right. Mm-hmm. So I can totally see how, you know, those are way different structures. Those are way different ways to approach playing.
Even though it's called jazz band, I'm not sure it was really what you're thinking. But anyway...
So, yeah, that's Amazon Anonymous for this week. Keep checking out, and maybe your purchase will be featured. We have no idea who you are who purchased these things, but thank you very much to everybody who has.
Mm-hmm.
We really appreciate it, and it helps us out a lot. Steve Ballmer, any thoughts?
No.
Okay.
I mean, if you have a thought, but
I
no,
just wonder if you had thoughts.
I'm a little pissed at it. I figured it out, but like they don't have a retail full version of Windows 8. You can only get the upgrade, or you can only get the OEM version.
Why would you want one?
Well, when you work for IT for a company, you have to keep your licensing legal.
Right.
And you want to run Windows 8 on a virtual machine, you can't buy the upgrade license. Turns out you can buy the OEM license and be legit, but it took much effort to figure that out. Much frustration and effort. But, you know, fuck Windows 8.
I was talking with a friend of mine about stocks and how I think that the stock market has turned into a crap table. Craps table, I should say.
That's a crap table.
It's no better than gambling now. And part of the reason is because so much money is now being thrown around in the stock market.
Was it ever... better than gambling?
Well, yeah, because at some point there was a reason to take care of, you know, even the smaller clients, and you know that money mattered. Now the money from people like you and me that go through the stock market doesn't matter. We're just kind of throwing it on pass fail. You know, we're that's all we're doing, and the things that we are looking for are out of our control. They're big forces that we aren't really any part of that actually affect how stocks move. And things like, you know, tiny data errors in transfer can cause stocks to drop $5 or something that we have nothing to do with. and is not had it has nothing to do and or crazy rumors that start up somewhere. It's pretty ridiculous how much stock market has really become a casino, and I think it's bad for the economy that's happened.
So I don't agree completely. I think, you know, high frequency trading and stuff is bad for people and bad for the economy. But, you know, relating it to gambling and once being better than gambling, stocks are worth what they're worth because of everything's adjusted to whether the likelihood of that thing going up versus down and the value of the stock, right?
No, that's it. That's only if you believe in rational actor theory, and that's been kind of disproven.
Okay.
I mean, the idea that the market runs on perfect efficiency is completely wrong. We know that to be false. The market is an inefficient system. Now, it's efficient in some ways, but it's not the most efficient, and it's not perfectly efficient. So to assume that market forces imply correct valuation is false.
Okay. Well, I got nothing to say.
So once you add the fact that the valuation is skewed, and you take in the fact that that your contribution is meaningless compared to the actual money that's going into the system for the most part, any playing around with stocks is no better than gambling. And that's bad. And that's bad, is my point. That's bad.
But how... Okay, so all of that, you had me lost. I had no argument, but playing around with stocks is no better than gambling today. But in the past, if a stock was worth what it was supposed to be worth, then you have a hunch that it's going to go up, going to go down, outside what everyone else in the market thinks, right? Otherwise, it's going to be valued at what people think it's going to be valued at.
Well, I mean, the problem was in the past, stocks were seen as at least sort of a more midterm, not super long-term like bonds, not, incredibly short-term like gambling, but the more of a midterm investment where, yeah, you have a chance to fail, but as long as you diversify, things are going to be good. But now it's at the point where it's almost all entirely a crapshoot, particularly when with large volume stocks. You can bet on some staying high like Apple. You can bet on some staying very low like Crapple. I don't know, but the stuff that does high volume, you don't know what the hell is going to happen with them. And there are so many people shorting. There are so many people doing crazy shit with stocks that it just becomes a casino, just a more respected version of a casino. And I don't think that is good for the economy.
Is publicly traded companies good for the economy, right? Because they have no more foresight than the next quarter.
A publicly traded company is in general good for the economy as long as the ownership is spread among a large amount of people, as opposed to just four or five people.
So much pressure to
four or five large banks.
Well, like the Dell situation, right? Dell wanted to go private because they needed to redo some things because their shareholders only cared about the next earnings report, right?
Right.
And some things to really do what you need to do takes a year, years, not just 90 days. And I kind of see that where it's like, there's no way to publicly support a company that isn't going to produce in 90 days.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, there's the reason why you have public offerings is because that is it gives you a huge endowment of capital. But then you have to worry about the fact that people want, you have now a board of directors that has a share of, a modicum of control over your company. Mm-hmm. So it's a dance with the devil, I guess. All I'm saying is that I think that, you know, high volume trading should be severely limited, and high frequency trading should be severely limited. And I think, you know, the SEC should really kind of nail down these things because, you know, I'm a fan of more regulation in the market. I don't want the market to be, you know, completely swamped by regulation, but I think that unregulated
when stuff, you buy a stock, you have to keep it for 2 years.
No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if strange pattern emerges, then that should be really looked at. And what I really think is that banks, the deregulation of banks really hurt. And allowing banks to trade stocks and also to to do so much more investing than they used to do in terms of loaning, but in terms of actually, you know, betting on things to fail and things like that, it screws up the whole economy.
All right, so we need to wrap this up because I got to be up at like 5:30 in the morning. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I wouldn't have gone on.
It's okay.
Well, it's nice talk to everybody. I think we had a better pre and post show than last week.
Yeah. Now I got to go do some firewall maintenance down at the Colo the first thing in the morning. So fun.
Enjoyable.
Yeah. It's almost like a thing. Do I stay up or do I go to sleep?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would, you know, get a little bit of sleep. Take some aspirin before you go to bed.
Yeah, so I don't have to worry about waking up any bit hungover, because that would just suck. All right, thanks. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.